welcome to another episode of Short Story Hunters. And as always, I'm here in the Lit Lounge with Johnny. Hi, Johnny.
Hi, Bea. How's the week been? All right?
Yeah, not too bad, actually. Actually, I've got a question for you.
Go on. Go on.
So how is that novel going? You know, the one where you had the main character who finds a man with a headshot off and he goes and checks his pulse. Well, you know, the man who's probably dead.
as I told my officer in the story itself, I suggested to the policeman he might be dead. And blow me, he was dead.
Yeah, that kind of the headshot off was kind of a bit of a clue, maybe, you know?
Well, yeah, but you have to... My character was traumatised, yeah?
Fair enough. All the blood, you know, was still pumping, so maybe he did have a...
Well, I have to say, sadly, he didn't make it. He didn't pull through.
Oh, dear. What a shame. Another question. I'm full of questions today. I'm doing an interrogation, by the way, just in case, you know. I might need evidence one day or, you know, some blackmailing. What's the worst crime you have ever committed?
I have never committed a crime in my life.
You just say that because we're recording it, don't you?
Yes. People might hear.
Do you know, I've never even had a speeding fine. Isn't that sad? No, actually, it's probably good, but I never even had a fine.
Well, I'll
not
tell you...
what. Parking fine.
Well, I'll tell you about that. You've just committed the cardinal sin. Let she who says she's never had a speeding fine tell us that this time next week, because you can bet a pound of a penny next time you're bowling down some road somewhere, somebody's going to leap out with one of those little handheld radars, or you'll have gone past a camera van. It's the curse, the curse. Take it back.
No, I'll never speed. You know why? I've got a little sort of old sports car, but I never really... It feels like you're going 70 miles an hour, and then you look down on your dashboard and all you do is 30, and you've got this huge queue of people behind you who want to overtake. Well, it's really quite embarrassing. I'm probably the only person in the world that goes around the countryside in a sports car going 30.
Well, not in a sports car. Not in a sports car, but you're pushing against an open door with me on this, because during my working life, I used to have to drive 40,000 miles a year. So you're always wary of not getting your license, and I'm proud to say I've never had a speeding ticket either. However, and I've just sort of committed my own first, broken my own first rule there. But I too drive around 30 miles an hour if it requires me to drive 30 miles an hour and 40, etc. And the queue of livid people behind you is hard to deal with, and you can see them, you know, giving special hand signals and stuff like that. But I just bowl on, and with my blue anorak and my flat cap and my driving gloves, and to hell with the rest of them.
Yeah, and you probably sing when you drive as well, don't you?
I do.
Being a musician, you know.
I do. I like a bit of song, you know. Very nice.
A bit of head banging when you drive. Maybe not.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's either Virilin or AC/DC. I can never make up my mind.
No rapping, you know, like you did in Dave's story in episode 4?
Nope, not yet. I've still got my man looking through the offers.
Oh, and one more thing. What did you bury under that lawn we talked about last week? I really want to know what you buried under that lawn.
I'll tell you when we get to the stories. First one, I'll let you know, but you mustn't tell anyone, okay?
Okay, then. While the story's on, you'll tell me.
I'll tell you, yeah.
Right, let's do some stories then, shall we?
Yes, let's.
And this week, as you can probably guess, the topic is crime.
I can see where you were going with all this, sort of trying to get me to incriminate myself.
Exactly. Proper police interrogation. I can get you to talk, don't worry. You know, torture things and all that. Yeah, anyway, so the first the first story is by Matthew Snodding. And it's a two-part story, actually, about William, who's suspicious about the activity of the people who live next door. And he's nosing out of the front window, and he thinks he has seen something.
Aha, well, that sounds intriguing. I think we probably ought to hear it now, don't you?
Neighbours by Matthew Snodding. Part 1. You just know, don't you? I mean, there are certain people who you know are going to be trouble just by looking at them. They wear those tracksuits or those hoodies or go around on those funny bikes so they can make a quick
get away. I've seen it on TV. Always people going in and out of the house. Drug dealing. Of course it's drug dealing. Oh, William, come away from the window. Aren't I allowed to look out of my own window? Is there some new law about that now? Don't you think you're being, you know, a bit judgmental? That's because there's something there to judge. This is a crime, Margaret. Crime going on outside in our street under our noses. And someone has to do something about it. They seem very pleasant to me. What? The neighbours. They seem very pleasant. You've spoken to them? Of course. When? Yeah, well, when I've been outside in the garden or walking to the shops or walking to the fields. They seem very friendly to me. They say hello. I say hello. They probably wanted to sell you drugs. Oh, don't be preposterous. They're grooming you, Margaret. Grooming you. I've seen how it works. That's how they start. It's all pleasantries one day and, oh, isn't it a lovely day? And 2 weeks later, you're lying on a mattress in their drug den as high as a kite, staring at the ceiling, not knowing what day it is. They only want your money. Have you been taking any new medication? I tell you, Margaret, not on my watch, not on my street. I didn't work hard all my life to live opposite a drug dealer. I am going to do something about it. Oh, promise me, William, you won't do anything stupid. But William had already left the room. Part 2. It's nighttime in a quiet street and a middle-aged man is creeping out of his front door. He's been watching all evening, waiting for the lights to go out in the house opposite. Proof, he's thinking to himself. I need some proof, and when I'll have it, I'll go to the police. He steals across the street and pushes open the gate. It squeaks, but quietly. In the distance, a dog barks. Some bins fall. Probably a fox, he thinks. He feels like a fox. Creeping in the dark, he feels alive. Young. He takes a couple of steps up the path towards the door. There's a rustle behind him. He turns, but can see nothing. Just a breeze, he thinks. The breeze in the bushes. He approaches the house and peers through the window. It's dark, but he's come prepared. He fumbles in his pocket and pulls out a torch. In his other hand, he has his phone. He'll shine the torch through the window and take the photo, get the proof. And that's what he does. He shines the torch and peers through the window. It's nighttime, in a quiet street, and a middle-aged man screams.
Do, 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 do. Oh, sorry, that was Matthew's story called Neighbours.
So, Johnny, let me ask you, is there anyone in your life that you would like to kill? Actually, don't answer that. Don't answer that. What you should do is write a story about it, 500 words. Write about that person, kill them in the story, and then send it to us at litopia.com/hunters.
Well, there's a couple of people I'm thinking about, and can I just ask you a question?
Yes, maybe.
Do I really need to write the story, or can I just get on and kill them?
No, you don't go killing them for real. Obviously.
You sure?
Yes.
The person I'm thinking of deserves it.
Oh, really? That bad, is it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Used to work for him. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, let's hear about that one day, shall we?
No, I mustn't. I'm getting carried away with myself, you know. Definitely not.
Right, next story then, shall we?
Yep, let's go with it.
And talking of killing bosses, we have another story by Sinead. And she is thinking, contemplating on killing her boss. And it's called How to Plan a Crime.
How to Plan the Perfect Crime by Sinead. How do you plan the perfect crime? It's something I've considered occasionally in an idle moment. And I don't mean some little inconsequential thing like pinching a book from the library or bunking into a gig without paying. I mean a proper big time thing like, say, the Great Train Robbery or maybe fraud and embezzlement on an industrial scale, enough to bring down a major financial institution. During many casual musings while driving the length and breadth of the country, I never once dreamt I'd really be contemplating committing a crime. And a serious one at that, too. But now I am, and just bloody typical of my luck, I find I'm going to have to murder someone. I can't say it's all bad news, though, because this bastard needs murdering at the very least. In fact, when I boil it all down, he deserves it. Many would say, and I'm one of them, that murder is too good for the tosser. It's just the prospect of doing it that fills me with a degree of trepidation. The nitty-gritty, the nuts and bolts of the thing. How to, the method and all that stuff. That's what I'm getting at here. To paraphrase dear old Shakespeare, how do I murder thee? Let me count the ways. In my mind, there are too fucking many I'd like to use. Many are politically just, others are just too impractical. Like, for example, strapping him to a conveyor belt that's moving slowly towards an intensely powerful laser beam. His legs are splayed wide open, and that means the beam's first point of contact will be his bollocks. The laser will simply slice him in two, and I'll observe the spectacle from a viewing gallery on high, chortling manically as this gruesome scene plays out below. But where do I get a powerful laser? Or a convenient conveyor belt with a suitable viewing gallery in its vicinity? Sadly, that option, my first choice by the way, has to be ruled out. In the end, I've decided my MO will be a grand piano, suspended by a rope, hanging over his head. I'll need to lure him into a trap first, although that bit of the plan should be easy enough. I've found this new calf, boss. Fry ups to die for. It's in a new place in an old abandoned quarry. Fancy giving it a go? My treat. That's what I'll tell him. He watches MasterChef and fancies himself as a bit of a gourmand. The twat. Before he shows up, I'll have manoeuvred the crane with the piano suspended from its arm directly above his chair. As soon as he's digging into his sausages, I'll press a remote control and boom! Death by Stockhausen syndrome. Meanwhile, I'm going to have to meet the tosser in 10 minutes in the Starbucks at Warwick Services North. We're doing a call together in Birmingham, and I bet he never fucking shuts up during the entire meeting either. I wonder if there's actually a noun for murdering your boss.
And that was Sinead, How to Plan a Crime. And while you guys all were listening to this lovely story, let me just say that Johnny has just tried to flog me some stolen CDs.
Well,
listening to.
Don't know about that, mate, but you know, if you want any books, I'm your man. All right, even that.
All right, well, I suppose we need to read the next story. I don't know if I can read the next story after all this.
Well, B, our third story is by Jake Joy, and it's a story about a woman assassin who's just finished one job and is being picked up by her handler to be taken on to the next job.
And tell us a little bit about Jake then, please.
He's called Jake Joy, and he's an aspiring author with a grandiose vision of being traditionally published one day. And he mostly writes fantasy and sci-fi adventure stories and the odd children's book for amusement too. He's currently the winner of no awards, he says, unless you count the short story competition he entered when he was 9, where he came a very commendable third.
Till Death Do Us Part by Jake. The door closed with a final click as she stepped out of the house and made her way down the street. She'd done her job. She knew the body wouldn't be found for at least a week. Gravel crunched underfoot as she reached the road at the same time as the car. It rolled to a stop, with its door open at the curb, its headlights burning a path through the night.
"All go to plan?"
asked the driver, his face hidden by the trilby squashed over his ears. "Oh yes, textbook," she answered as she slumped into the passenger seat and closed the door. The car moved off. "I'd say it was one of my easier jobs, even though I had to marry him first." She removed her fake contacts in the mirror. Blue eyes returned to green in an instant. The driver nodded and turned the car out of the suburbs and towards the city. It loomed ahead of them, its skyline reaching into the night like headstones. As they passed the city limits, the moon disappeared behind a building, and the silence of the streets crept into the car. The silence gave her thoughts a chance to creep in. She sighed. They passed an alley. He stopped and reversed into its shadows, killing the engine once off the street. "You see him?" "Never mind." He stopped and reached into the glove box. "Here, your new assignment." She took the manila folder and set it in her lap before pulling the blonde wig from her head. long black curls unfolded from underneath and bounced to a stop just above her shoulders. She gave them a shake. "Damn wigs," she cursed. "Just once I'd like to do a job without wearing a wig." "Assassins don't have that luxury," he said. "If you screw up, you become the target. And when you're the target, I'm the target. And as your handler, I don't have the luxury of oversight. No one can know it was you. There can be no trail back to the Bureau." "Bad for business, I suppose." He grunted an agreement and turned to the window as she began removing her blouse. The soft, white cotton was stained crimson, the hazards of stabbing a man with a kitchen knife. "Well, one last job and we can go home," he said. "It's my youngest son's birthday on Tuesday." She nodded. "Is that so?" And opened the folder, her eyes widening as she took in the text. He must have screwed up. "Oh, I hope this one doesn't take too long," he said. "I can't stand being on the road. I miss my boys." He remained glued to the window. "I need to make this birthday. I miss so many." She slid the paper into the folder and smiled. "Oh, honey," she said as she pulled a small revolver from the purse. "This one's going to take no time at all."
And that was "Till Death Do Us Part" by Jake.
And this was our episode on crime, but I have to say the biggest crime. Can you see the bloke over there? He's still wearing that Hawaiian shirt, and I mean, that is a crime.
That's gaudy. I think I'm being, you know, gaudy. Is that a good word for it, gaudy?
Gaudy, no, it's just Hawaiian, isn't it? Tropical. It's tropical. But yes, it is certainly a crime, isn't it? But we should go before we get arrested. We'll do it again next week from prison.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.